Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Vanchkalpaturubhyas jagripa sindhu devacha. Paritanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Welcome everyone to our initiation ceremony here at our Jagannath Rath Yatra Festival, Lent Asia 2012. We are just utilizing the time really till Lord Jagannath arrives. So we will continue on and give a talk now about initiation, and then hopefully Jagannath will arrive in order to witness the devotees taking their vows, means those who are taking first initiation. It's nice if they take their vows in front of the deities. So, yes, we have today two devotees receiving first initiation, and we have nine devotees receiving second initiation. Very nice. I'm sure Srila Prabhupada would be happy and is happy that this is all happening like this, because the happiness of the great devotees like Srila Prabhupada is to see other people progress in Krishna consciousness and in that way become happier in life. Because if one is progressing in Krishna consciousness, then necessarily one becomes happier. So, yes, our devotees who are taking first initiation, when Srila Prabhupada would give first initiation, he would emphasize particularly the necessity of very good chanting. Because in this Kali Yuga, the process is to chant the holy names. Actually, we do many other activities also, like deity worship and so many things, and fire sacrifice we're going to be doing shortly. But in Kali Yuga particularly, the main process is to chant the holy names. When Lord Chaitanya received initiation from Ishwarapuri, then he asked Ishwarapuri, after the actual initiation, he asked him, "So what is my duty now? Now that I'm initiated, what should I do?" And Lord Chaitanya suggested, not that he was really thinking like that, but just really to make the point, Lord Chaitanya suggested, "Should I study Vedanta philosophy?" Means complex and oftentimes apparently impersonal philosophy, at least oftentimes, or even more often than not, it is interpreted in impersonal ways. And the Mayavadis, their program is to study Vedanta and discuss it and give different interpretations on it and construe different things from it, squeeze out different forced meanings like this. So Lord Chaitanya wanted to make a point, so therefore he asked Ishwarapuri immediately, just when the initiation process had finished, he asked, "What should I do now? Should I study Vedanta and discuss it and debate it like that?" And Ishwarapuri said, "No, don't do that." And Ishwarapuri quoted a very famous verse, at least it's very, very famous amongst the devotees, and particularly in ISKCON, it is a very famous verse, "Harir Nam, Harir Nam, Harir Nam, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nas Jeva Nas Jeva Nas Jeva Katira Anyata." That one must chant the holy names, chant the holy names, chant the holy names of Hari, Krishna. There's no other way to achieve the goal of pure Krishna consciousness in this age of Kali. So this is what Ishvara Puri told Lord Chaitanya, that this is your duty, actually, do this. So Lord Chaitanya, not that he needs to take the role of a disciple at all, obviously, but to set an example, taking the role of a disciple, Lord Chaitanya immediately started doing that, and doing it very seriously, like 24 hours a day. He was just chanting. And Lord Chaitanya's chanting, of course, it was really first class chanting. There was no question of even the shadow or dim reflection of an offense. 10 offenses or the 11th offense of being inattentive. There was just nothing of that at all. And as a result, when Lord Chaitanya chanted Hare Krishna, then immediately symptoms of ecstasy just overwhelmed him completely, immediately on the spot. And before he knew it, before anybody knew it, he was rolling on the ground, tears were coming from his eyes, and his body was shivering in ecstasy. And these are some of the what are called astasattvika bhavas, the 8 particular ecstasies which are there through contact with the Shuddha Sattva potency of the Lord. Shuddha Sattva means the internal spiritual potency of the Lord, which is it is like the total spiritual potency, including Sat, Chit and Ananda, which are 3 divisions of the spiritual potency. Srimati Radharani is the personification of the Ananda potency, Pladini Shakti or pleasure potency, which is one of the 3 divisions of that Shuddha Sattva internal spiritual potency of the Lord. So Shuddha Sattva means pure goodness, and the Ashta Sattvika Bhavas, they're indicating ecstasies which are coming, or 8 ecstasies which are coming to the person when they're situated in that condition of being under the influence of that Shuddha Sattva pure spiritual potency. So Lord Chaitanya was displaying all these symptoms, and even to the point that he was finding it very difficult to chant. As soon as he would open his mouth to say Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, he couldn't finish the whole mantra. Couldn't finish it. He would just get 1 or 2 or a few words out, and then those ecstasies would come, and he just couldn't function on the external level. So Lord Chaitanya, again acting as if he is a regular disciple who is experiencing something he hasn't experienced before, and he wants to know what it is and how to deal with it. So Lord Chaitanya then, he approached Ishvara Puri, went back to Ishvara Puri and said, this is what is happening. You told me to chant, and I'm chanting, but it's very difficult because this happens. And Lord Chaitanya actually suggested, he said, I think I must be doing something wrong. You have to help me. I must be chanting improperly, because as soon as I start, then I can't do it. And Ishvara Puri understanding the situation and understanding who Lord Chaitanya was, he just laughed. And he said, "Congratulations, my dear child. You have perfected your life." So, like we were saying, in first initiation, Srila Prabhupada, when he was giving it, he would emphasize the chanting and the need to chant without offenses, because the chanting is the main part of the process. Not the only part, but certainly very much the main part. And it really needs to be at the top of the list of priorities for any devotee in ISKCON, in Krishna consciousness, to really, you could say, to really work on our chanting. And Srila Prabhupada, when he was giving first initiation, then in this regard, what he would do would be, he would discuss the 10 offenses. So here we are today, and our priest, and what to speak of our priest, even the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, some delay is there. So we could talk a little bit about these things at our leisure. Please listen carefully, because the importance of avoiding the offenses should never be underestimated, and it cannot be overestimated. It really can't. The tendency in many things, the tendency in Krishna consciousness may be to underestimate the value of chanting, of reading the books, of associating nicely with devotees. As we become a little more used, you could say used to being devotees, and kind of our lifestyle has adjusted in many ways to a devotee lifestyle, then it's not difficult to become a little familiar with the process and then not really feel the need, or not really understand the need so clearly, that we must do certain things in certain ways, and that really is all there is to it. And these things, like beginning with chanting, they certainly never become optional, and they never become just another one of those things we just do. But they're really essential and life-sustaining in Krishna consciousness activities. Just like generally we don't underestimate, I mean some people do, but generally we don't underestimate the importance of eating. And in Krishna consciousness, of course, prasadam is so nice that it's very rare to find devotees who underestimate the value of eating prasadam. Yes. Or taking some rest at night because we need to be strong again the next day to serve. So anyway, the point here is that we should be careful not to underestimate the value, the potency, and the beneficial effects of chanting, and of chanting very nicely as we are capable, taking into consideration our conditions, having been in this material world for many years. So Srila Prabhupada then, he would generally talk about 10 offenses and emphasize the importance of avoiding them. So let us say a few words about this now, that there are 10 offenses. Should we perhaps go around all the devotees and ask them, tell us one of the 10 offenses? What's the first offense? Well done, thank you very much. to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the glories of the holy names. This is the first offense. The devotees are very dear to Krishna, and even some devotee who is not really propagating the holy names of the Lord, but is just sort of, you know, just there somewhere as a devotee, not so active. But any devotee is very dear to Krishna, actually. And we mention often that Jiva Goswami says in Bhakti Sandhata that even though Krishna is very vast, he's actually unlimited in extent. Just like he says, Jiva Goswami says, just like an unlimited ocean, Krishna's so vast. But, he says, even though Krishna is so great, still, he never forgets even the smallest drop of service. Even someone does something, someone who's not a devotee, not practicing and understanding at all, just some person from the material world, even if somehow they even accidentally, unintentionally, unknowingly, and even sometimes it happens without them even wanting to do something which pleases Krishna, then Krishna appreciates that. Krishna appreciates that. And there are stories, in fact, Jiva Goswami in that regard tells a number of stories in Bhaktisiddhanta of different people and even some animals who engaged in some Krishna conscious activity or some activity which pleased Krishna unintentionally, unknowingly. He tells one story which in fact Srila Prabhupada mentions in a lecture on Bhagavad Gita chapter 2 verse 40. Should we ask you devotees what is chapter 2 verse 40? Anyway, think about it. Look it up. Because Brahmins, particularly those who are getting second initiation, you're meant to be, you know, like Shastras, really. Seriously. Well, I tell you quite frankly, in Russia, in order to get second initiation, you have to have Bhakti Shastri. Otherwise you can't be considered for second initiation. Yeah. So yes, Srila Prabhupada then gives a lecture on that verse, Bhagavad Gita 2:40, and right at the beginning, that verse, Neha Bikramanasha Sti Prachuvayana Vijite Svalpamapyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahatovayat, that a devotee, that in this process of devotional service, in this endeavor, there's no loss and no diminution, and even a little advancement can save one from the greatest type of fear. So the idea is that at least in this regard, even a little advancement can save one from the greatest type of fear. That even if a person does just a little devotional service, then they don't have to take birth as animals, even though they may have done so much terrible sinful activity in the past, but they're saved from that, the greatest type of fear. And what to speak of being saved from that, they may go back to Godhead. Well, so Prabhupada then tells the story, which Jiva Goswami tells in Bhaktisiddhanta, of a mouse in a temple in India some time ago before electricity. The mouse was living here, just picking up some scraps of prasadam here and there. And when he couldn't find any prasadam, what he would do, they used oil lamps to light it and the oil lamps were up, you know, on sort of like poles like this. There's a bowl with an oil lamp. He would climb up the pole into the bowl and drink some of the oil. And sometimes this is how he would maintain himself, because he did not know this is a temple and these oil lamps are to light up the temple for the pleasure of the Lord and so the devotees can see the Lord. He didn't. He was just thinking, oh, something to eat when I'm really desperate. So Prabhupada tells, and Jiva Goswami tells, how that mouse one day climbed up, was drinking the oil, but he slipped into the bowl, which was full of oil, and drowned. But while he slipped in, his nose hit the end of the wick. If you're familiar with oil lamps, like a piece of string hanging into the oil, and it needs to be adjusted from time to time to burn nicely and for as long as possible. So he knocked the end of the wick and moved it a little so it burnt a little longer for the pleasure of the deity and the devotees. Obviously it was not the intention of the mouse to do that, and he had no idea what was going on at all spiritually. So anyway, Jiva Goswami and Srila Prabhupada say the mouse then drowned in the oil, and what happened to him? He went back to Godhead. He went back to Godhead. This is like a classic story of the value of Krishna consciousness. So the point we're making is that Krishna appreciates any service, even the smallest drop, and even something done unintentionally, unknowingly, and even in some cases people do something which pleases Krishna, and if they knew that it was going to please Krishna, they might not have done it. Krishna is so benevolent. So if we offend any devotee, it matters. It really matters. But if you offend a devotee who has dedicated his or her life to propagating the glories of the holy names, oh my gosh, Krishna really takes note of that. It goes in his black book. Not the good book, but yeah. It's really very extremely undesirable. So anyway, then second offense. Will someone volunteer to us what is the second offense? It's a good one for the Hindus. Okay, yeah, basically like that. To consider the names of demigods like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Durga, and Kalima, Madhravira, Santoshima, and various others. There's 33 million. To consider their names to be equal to or independent of the names of Krishna. So the thing is that it's not just like talking about the names only. It's talking about Krishna, in that Krishna's names are Krishna. So if the name of someone is equal to the name of Krishna, it means the name of the other person is equal to Krishna, because the name is Krishna. It's not just a label just arbitrarily given to someone because their parents happen to see a particular Bollywood movie and some of the, one of the characters had some jazzy name, and so they decided to give their child that name. It's just a label, and it's nothing more than that. But Krishna's names are Krishna. So if somebody's name is equal to or independent of the name of Krishna, then it means that they are equal to or independent of Krishna, which is not the case and cannot be the case. It's a very important point. So you know what we see sometimes? We visit devotees so often over the years we've visited devotees, I don't know how many thousands, but what we see in some places, you know what we see? Is that in the front area there is nice altar, Krishna conscious altar. They may even have deities, Gornitai, like this, or at least some nice Krishna conscious pictures on the altar, looks good. But then if you go out the back side of the house, there is another altar. Oh, and there are all these, some at least of these different personalities we just mentioned, demigods. And, you know, sometimes those devotees see that we have noticed, and they have all sorts of excuses and ideas, but none of them are good. Yes. So that's the second offense. Then the third offense. Who's going to tell us the third offense? Yes. Say it again. Okay, very good, thank you. To disobey the orders of the spiritual master. Yes. One is initiated by a spiritual master. It's not just like when you're at school or university, you study some subjects and then you sit the exam and there's some board of examiners or just some students marking your paper, and they determine whether you're qualified or not. And it's not you, there's no real connection between them and you. In Krishna consciousness, one is initiated by a spiritual master, and there's very important connection, and even eternal connection, between spiritual master and disciple. And the spiritual master, of course, is the guide and is to instruct and direct like this in Krishna consciousness. And the disciple is to accept that guidance and direction. This is, of course, the basic idea. So if, in our ignorance, we think that we don't need to follow the directions of the spiritual master, we have another idea. We have an idea which appeals to us more. And therefore we neglect the order of the spiritual master. This is the third offense. And then the fourth offense, who will volunteer to us? Yes. Thank you very much. Yes, that's the fourth offense, to blaspheme the Vedic literature or literatures in pursuance of the Vedic version, the Vedic literatures. So the Vedic literatures themselves, some are spoken directly by Krishna, others are spoken by very great devotees who are very great authorities, very significant devotees like Narada Muni. He is an eternal associate of the Lord. So, obviously we, in our ignorance, we cannot improve upon the Vedic literatures. which are coming from the Lord, or these extremely great, outstanding devotees. That would really be the height of foolishness. And then the literatures in pursuance of the Vedic version, that basically means the commentaries of the great acharyas, like Srila Prabhupada's commentaries, the writings of devotees like Srila Rupa Goswami, like Nectar of Devotion, is written by him, and then with commentary by Srila Prabhupada. So that is the fourth offense, to undervalue those great supreme literatures. And then the fifth offense, what is the fifth offense? Yes. Did one of the Matajis? Oh yes, one of the Matajis did. Fifth offense. Say it again, Lada. Almost. That's the sixth. What is it? To consider the glories of chanting the holy names to be imagination, some sort of overestimation. Yes, so that's the fifth offense. And as it happens, Srila Prabhupada is coming in. Where will Prabhupada sit, actually? Oh, I see. Okay. So let us offer our obeisances as Srila Prabhupada comes in. Srila Prabhupada ki. There are numerous statements in the Vedic literatures about the power of the holy names. And of course, when we were talking about the second offense, it's related in principle, in that the holy name of the Lord is the Lord. It's not just a representation, something symbolical, something just to remind us. It is the Lord in person. And any devotee who chants very sincerely, then in due course, they will actually come to meet Krishna face to face in the form of his holy name. Because that's the main process. The idea of the process is to meet Krishna face to face and enter one's eternal relationship with him. That's what it's all about. And the process for doing that is chanting the holy names. So therefore it is to be expected that a devotee who really applies themselves, that they will meet Krishna eventually, and it will be in the holy name, actually, primarily. So then, either someone's just arrived from India. Someone who drives in India, or it's the deities coming. So the name of the Lord is the Lord. Therefore, the name of the Lord has all the potencies of the Lord in all respects. In all respects, without any limitations. So therefore, just as Krishna can do anything, he can turn day into night, night into day. With Krishna, bad can be good. Yes. All these things. Nothing is impossible, ultimately, with Krishna. So nothing is impossible for the holy name of the Lord. And therefore, one should never think that the statements about what the holy name can do, how it can influence you, how it can help you, and even how little of it may be able to help you in some unlimited way, none of these things should be considered to be imagination or just some like over enthusiastic ideas of some fanatical devotees. It's not like that at all. For example, it's said that if you chant the name Krishna just one time, purely, just one time, that can relieve you from an unlimited amount of sinful reaction, which you could not acquire even in an unlimited period of time in the material world. That's really a lot of karma. But you just chant the name Krishna one time properly, and it can free you from all of that instantly on the spot. So it is not some sort of fanciful idea of some over enthusiastic fanatic who just somehow got very carried away about Krishna. It is a fact. And indeed, we mentioned earlier about Lord Chaitanya, what happened with him when he was initiated. That was just immediately he started chanting, immediately, these amazing symptoms, and all of them simultaneously came. And that was because his chanting was actually pure. So anyone who chants like that will have the same or at least a very similar type of experience. So therefore the glories of chanting the holy names of the Lord should not be considered imagination. And yes, thank you for giving us the sixth offense, to give some mundane interpretation on the holy names of the Lord. That, you know, it's like this, it's like that. To compare it to something material. The classic example, a classic example which is given, is described actually in Chaitanya Charitamrita, how Lord Chaitanya was teaching Sanskrit after he had been initiated. He was initiated in Gaya. What's our program? Are the deities coming in? I think they should just come in. And we will stop for a couple of minutes as they come in. And then we'll continue. Yeah. So, Lord Chaitanya was initiated in Gaya. And then came back to Navadvip. Prior to initiation, he was not exhibiting externally the symptoms of being a devotee much. Certainly not in any very prominent way at all, and only occasionally at the best or at most. But then he came back from Gaya, and he came back a God-intoxicated person. Welcome to Swagata. And in order to make a living, he was teaching. He was from a Brahmin family. It's a standard activity for Brahmins. He was teaching Sanskrit. And he was teaching Sanskrit through the holy names. There are many rules and different nouns and adjectives and verbs and different ways of working with all these things, grammatical rules. he renamed all the grammatical rules with Krishna conscious names to indicate the grammatical function. Sri Baladev Ji Ki. I'll give you an example. It's an interesting example. It's slightly technical, so please listen to it. In Sanskrit, there's a certain set of rules, extremely complex set of rules. They're called the rules of Sandhi. Those of you who are familiar with Indian languages, you would know Sandhi, even I think in Hindi, means meeting. So when words meet, then the last letter of the first word and the first letter of the second word, when those words meet, the rules of Sandhi means that different, the last letter and first letter may change in different ways. They may change in different ways. Srimati Subhadra Devi Ki. Like we chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We've all heard that so many times. So actually, in the sort of raw form, it is Om Namaha. The word is Namaha. It's the what do you call it? The subjective form, nominative. Nominative form is Namaha. But when Aha is the last syllable and Ba is the first syllable of the next word, then Aha becomes O. Therefore we say Om Namo. We don't say Om Namaha. We say Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. There, see, you just learned something about Sanskrit. The letters which, without going into too much detail, the letters which may change are called by Lord Chaitanya. They're called Vaishnavas. Those letters which may change. Some don't change. Aha changes, but some letters don't change. Those that change are called Vaishnavas when they meet. Sri Jagannath Dev Ki. So Sunday in this sense means the meeting of Vaishnavas. I hope we haven't lost anybody here. The meeting of Vaishnavas, letters which are Vaishnavas, called, that group is called Vaishnavas. And what happens when Vaishnavas meet? They have Sadhu Sangha. So the rules of Sandhi governing those in that situation, they're called Sadhu Sangha. There you go. So anyway, yes, we were talking about Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya was teaching Sanskrit, and one of his students, well, Lord Chaitanya was teaching Sanskrit, but in a very Krishna conscious way. Everything was adapted and to Krishna consciousness. All the examples were Krishna conscious. Sri Sudarshan Juki. Everything was adapted to Krishna consciousness, and all Krishna conscious terminology for all the different rules and groups of letters, like consonants, vowels, and they have other groups in Sanskrit. Everything had Krishna conscious names. So one of Lord Chaitanya's students, wanting to impress Lord Chaitanya and in that way get good marks, he decided to say something very appreciative to Lord Chaitanya, appreciative about the chanting. So Lord Chaitanya would think, oh, what a nice student, and perhaps give him better marks. So what he did, he said, you know, the student said, this chanting is so nice. I think it is as good as an Ashwamedha sacrifice. It is as powerful as an Ashwamedha sacrifice. An Ashwamedha sacrifice happens to be the topmost of all the Karmakandiya sacrifices, of all the materialistic sacrifices for improving your situation materially. So he thought, the student thought, I have given an excellent glorification. And surely my teacher, who at that time, Lord Chaitanya was known as Nimai Pandit, surely Nimai Pandit is going to be pleased with me, he'll give me good marks. Unfortunately for the student, he was not aware of the 10 offenses and the chanting of the holy names. He did not know, he had just committed the 6th offense and displeased Lord Chaitanya greatly. And Lord Chaitanya got so angry, he picked up a stick and chased the student to beat him. And the student had to run for his life. And he complained, the student complained to the fellow students who were not devotees. And they had a little revolution against Lord Chaitanya, actually. Anyway, so the 6th offense is to give some mundane interpretation. Means compare the holy names to something material. And in that way, feel that we have now described the glory of the holy name by comparing it to something materially glorious. Like the Ashwamedha sacrifice is the most glorious mundane activity. And think now, oh, we have now glorified the holy names by comparing it to that. Then what is the 7th offense? Yes. Sorry. Okay, well done. To commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting the holy names. After having heard about all these things and how powerful the holy names are, then to think that, yes, I can do what I like. All day I will just eat, drink, and be merry. And in the evening when I take rest, I will just say, Hare Krishna. And that will have eliminated all the sinful reactions, and next day I'll start with a clean slate. So that is the 7th offense. And why? Because the holy name is the Lord, is not just some name, a label. It is actually the Lord in person. And if one were to do like that, one would be trying to take advantage of and cheat the Lord, actually, abuse the Lord, misuse the good fortune of having the opportunity to chant the holy names. So Krishna really doesn't like that. And therefore, in Padma Purana, where these 10 offenses are listed, it is called Mahapap. It is called the greatest of all of the offenses, or greatest of all sinful activities. Yeah. Then 8th offense, what's the 8th offense? We're doing well, we haven't missed one. Just the 5th and 6th got a little mixed up, but that's okay. So 8th offense is... volunteer? Brahmins? Scholars? Shall I? Sorry? Okay. basically, to consider the chanting of Hare Krishna to actually be one of the auspicious ritualistic activities offered in the Vedas as fruit of activities, Karmakandya, is a little different from the sixth, which was just to compare it, to make some comparison between the chanting of the holy name and some material activity. This eighth offense means now we are thinking it is a material prayer. It's just another material mantra. There's so many materialistic mantras. Om Namah, Om Namo Shivaya. It's material. It's material, it's not spiritual. So to think that Hare Krishna Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya is just the same as, it's just another one of these mundane mantras. This is the eighth offense. And ninth offense? Okay. To give some instruction to a faithless person. You know, of course, we are preaching. Our main activity, in one sense, is to preach and give people Krishna consciousness. And the fact is that practically all the people, if not actually all, that we have to preach to, they need to be preached to because they don't have faith. And some of them are just hopelessly without faith. But it's our business as devotees to preach to them. And you might think that in that way we are necessarily committing the ninth offense whenever we preach to some ordinary person in the street. But really the context is that this ninth offense means that we try to preach the glories of the holy names. Well, there are different contexts. One context would be to someone who is staunchly opposed to it. And if you start glorifying anything Krishna conscious to that person, it's going to bring out their envy and their antagonism. Another is to preach the glories of the Lord in such ways that it goes beyond the capacity of the person to understand it, and they may become confused. Or, for example, to preach some very elevated, very exalted aspect of the philosophy of the holy names. The holy names, that it means Radha and Krishna. Hare is Radha. So when we say Hare Krishna, it is Srimati Radharani and Krishna together, and actually their conjugal pastimes are included. So if one starts preaching the glories of chanting Hare Krishna and telling people, yes, it's all about the conjugal pastimes and introducing those pastimes to people who are just not equipped to understand them or appreciate them, and then they become confused. These are different examples of how this ninth offense can be committed. We're almost there. Tenth offense. What is the tenth offense? Okay, very good. Yes, to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy names, and to maintain material attachments even after having heard so many instructions on these matters. So, of course, it is expected that devotees over a period of time, from the very beginning stages, as they get into it more and more, it's expected that their conviction will increase, their understanding will increase, and they'll become more fixed in their acceptance and their application of Krishna consciousness, and it will just become part of them. So this should be there. This should happen. In other words, it should not be that after hearing about these things, after chanting and serving and associating for an extended period of time, it is not that we should all just remain the same old materialistic people we were before. We should change. We should change. This is to be expected.
Yeah.
And then there's another offense. It's also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. So devotees, this of course is particularly stressed, these 10 offenses, avoiding them. It's particularly stressed for those who are taking first initiation, but obviously it applies to everyone. Those taking second initiation, those who are not being initiated, those who are already initiated. This is all extremely important for everyone. Then, of course, we have, in fact, the majority of the devotees being initiated today are receiving second initiation, 9 of them out of the 11. So that, of course, means they're already first initiated. They've already passed that.
I think we covered number 4.
Someone to be second initiated, they have to already be first initiated, already come to that standard, required standard for first initiation, and then gone beyond that, advanced beyond that. And particularly in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna, chapter 18, verse 42, lists out the main qualities of the Brahman. And we do say that when devotees are receiving Brahminical initiation, they should know what are the qualities of a Brahman, because it means what are the qualities you're meant to have. And you should know them. But Krishna says, Sama namasta paksocham shanti arjavam evacha gyanam vigyanam astikyam brahma karma subhavacham. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, wisdom, knowledge, and religiousness. These are the qualities by which the Brahmins work. This is chapter 18, verse 42 of Bhagavad Gita. So when the spiritual master and when the senior devotees see that first initiated devotees are displaying, they're manifesting these qualities more and more. In other words, they're progressing, they're developing as Krishna conscious persons. When the spiritual master and the authorities see this, then it's possible for a devotee to receive second initiation. When a devotee receives first initiation, they receive the holy name, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, via the sanctified chanting beads. They also receive a new spiritual name, which they should be addressed by, at least in amongst the devotees, in devotee society, they should be addressed by. And of course they vow to chant 16 rounds a day minimum and to follow the 4 regulative principles. No meat, fish, eggs, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex life. And the spiritual master vows internally to do whatever he can to help them become delivered from this material world and go back to Godhead. In second initiation, the devotees, there's no really further vowing, but the devotees receive 2 very specific things. They receive the Gayatri mantras, which are very beautiful mantras, 7 mantras, 7 special mantras, which they then chant every day, 30 times each mantra, 3 times, 10 times actually. Those mantras are chanted every day, and they're very beautiful mantras, and if one chants them nicely, then one feels the effect, it's very wonderful actually. In fact, it's very amazing. Not that it is better than chanting Hare Krishna, but it helps in one's chanting of Hare Krishna and helps in general in one's life in Krishna consciousness. And then the second thing one receives is the right permission is implicit in the receipt of second initiation, permission to worship installed deities. Worship of deities at home is, at least in many cases, not up to the standard of proper deity worship, actually. Proper deity worship, those standards are generally the standards which are followed, maintained in our temples. Even, frankly, our temple here in Lanesha, the standard in certain respects is not the ideal standard, at least let us say, in that first initiated devotees, not who are not second initiated, are allowed to cook for the deities, which is not the normal standard. Normally it would only be second initiated devotees. But at least for the worship on the altar in Lanesha and in general in all of our established temples around the world, then only devotees who are second initiated are allowed to go on to the altar at all and to do any part of the worship on the altar, like the puja of bathing, dressing the deities, offering the boga on the altar, offering arati on the altar. This is only for second initiated devotees. So in this regard, of course, this is a very wonderful facility and opportunity for devotees to be able to do that, and if it's done nicely, it's extremely beneficial, and one feels the benefit very deeply. It's very wonderful. So one thing I would like you all to know, the nine of you who are receiving second initiation, I know that many of you are involved already in cooking for Nitai Gaur Hari, but now you're all receiving second initiation. I want, this is an instruction, I want all of you to participate on a regular basis. How often that might be would be worked out in terms of personal circumstances and situation. But I want all of you on a regular basis to worship Nitai Gaur Hari on the altar under the supervision of the head pujaris and the temple presidents, etc., like that. Is that understood? Yeah. It's for your own good. We shouldn't be thinking, we're looking now, what will I have time? How will I squeeze it in? You know, when we allow devotees to worship deities at home, we are often asked, what is the minimum standard? In other words, how little can we do so we're not off the scale? So it is truly for one's great, great benefit, really. So that's my instruction. That doesn't mean that you must be there every day, but please, on a regular basis, you must do this and be very responsible about it. It is a very important part of being a Brahmin to worship the deity. Yes, so, very good. Are we ready, basically? We've done Archanam. Everyone's... We've done Archanam already. So we could perhaps then progress onto the stage of the devotees receiving first initiation. For their neck beads to be changed, replaced with new, minimum 3 times round the neck beads. We ask all of you devotees here who are witnessing this event, please give your blessings to these nice devotees. I think you all know them very well, and you know they're very nice devotees. They're very much committed and have been in many cases for many years. Please give them your blessings. And those of you will call up in a minute, one by one, the two devotees receiving first initiation. Those of you who are receiving second initiation, you don't need to come forward, but you do need to receive the Gayatri mantras, which we will give you just when we conclude, I think. The idea is to go to your house just nearby and do it there. Just as soon as we finish here, we just walk straight out and go to your house, and we'll give you the mantras there, the Gayatri mantras. Okay. So we will respect the etiquettes of seniority here. We have two devotees, very nice devotees, are receiving first initiation. We will call the elder senior first. If we may refer to you as Bhakta Harilal. I don't know if anyone explained the process. Did anyone explain? Well, sort of, okay. And yes, chant Pranam mantra audibly.
Loudly.
Hare Krishna. So just come here. See, there's the microphone there. Just come there. And, yeah, just kneel down there. No, you take the microphones for you. Just kneel down there and hold the microphone. Just kneel down by the microphone. Yeah, take the microphone. Okay. So please tell us, Harilal Ji, what are the four regulative principles you're vowing today to follow? Repeat the principles into the microphone.
No intoxication. Mm-hmm. No flesh eating. No gambling. And no illicit sex.
Thank you, very good. And wait, wait. What is the minimum number of rounds you'll chant of the Hare Krishna mantra?
16 rounds.
Very good. Thank you very much. Okay. So already you have a nice name, Harilal. Nice name. You're very fortunate. But we're going to change it a little, and I think maybe make it nicer, a little nicer. From today on, you will be known as, well, we're going to give you a name. Harilal can be one who is dear to Hari, or Hari who is dear. We're going to give you a name which indicates you are a servant of the lotus feet of Hari Krishna. From today on, you'll be known as Hari Charan Das. Sri Hari Charan Das Prabhu Ki.
Sit down again.
And next is Bhakta Sandesh.
Hare Krishna.
I was going to ask Sandesh Prabhu's wife what name I should give him. It didn't happen. But anyway, we'll try our best. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. So please tell us, Sandesh Prabhu, what are the four regular principles you're planning today to apply?
Four regular principles is no meat eating, including fish and eggs, no gambling, no intoxication, including tea and coffee, no illicit sex.
Good. And what's the minimum number of rounds you'll chant every day?
Six.
Good. Thank you. Okay, you can put it down. So, we are going to give you, well, your wife has the name Ramuna Priya, which is a nice name. And I was contemplating what name to give you, and I thought I'd give you a name which is connected, but maybe not, you know, like really so obviously or even in an outspoken way connected, but still related and very nice. I'm going to give you a name. It's a very beautiful name of Krishna, and it's a name of Krishna which means that he is the beautiful darkish person who attracts everyone, including Srimati Radharani and just everyone. From today on, you will be known as Shyam Mohan. Sri Shyam Mohan Das Prabhu Ki. Very good, thank you. So now we'll hand over to our priest, His Grace Shyam Sundar Prabhu, to take us through the fire sacrifice.